Tonight, Pretty Late's Chief Geek Officer Elliot Serrano rides sidecar. It's Friday, so of course we have the Budget Crisis Corner and What's in the Box. And finally, Broken English has sent the drinks to get us ready for the weekend. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Oh, man, this is quite the night. You know, I've noticed something, Craig. When we started doing this Budget Crisis Corner, I feel like the cocktail selection has improved. I feel like I feel like the restaurants and bars in the Chicagoland area are like, whatever it takes, here, have a margarita, fix this.
We'll send food, we'll do whatever.
It's been some good food. Representative Anthony was very upset when Senator Connolly and Senator Cullerton were here, Tom Cullerton, because they had steak and ceviche. Tonight we have, from Broken English, we have some great tacos and margaritas, and the reason we are doing the Budget Crisis Corner is because two budget deadlines have come and gone, and we do not have a budget in the state of Illinois. Now we know that, a million people now have been affected who receive social services. Some of them have been cut off completely. It's varying degrees. There are mental health programs that are shutting down. The Lutheran Charities have closed their doors. And Catholic Charities say that they are on the verge. There's a lot of programs throughout the state of Illinois that are crucial to many of us. Even the Department of Transportation threatened to cease some of their construction. So this is affecting everybody. Maybe not directly. Maybe the impact is not being felt as deeply as it is for some. So I want to introduce you to legislators every week, one Republican, one Democrat, to talk to each other, to talk to you, to have a conversation, and tell us where they're coming from, how what can we do, what they want to do, what their approach is. And also take calls and questions from you, 312-981-7200, at any time during the show. You can call or text us, and we look forward to hearing from you. Right now, we have Representative Batnick is joining us for the first time on the show, and you have said that you would like Representative Martwick to start off, because this is, I want you to say hello, though.
Oh, hello, everybody. Yes. I'm just going to his seniority. I'm the freshman, so I believe it's only proper, just like when you're presenting a bill, to let the veteran go first. So have at it.
He said, I think he said age before beauty was what he said to you, Representative. He's thinking about it.
He's got a better head of hair.
I just hope that this continues throughout the rest of the legislative session.
Yes.
Hello, Patty, and hello, Mark. It's great to be here again. And you wanted me to do a little brief introduction. I know a lot of your listeners have heard you,
but I think that and it's been a while. But they've heard you before, but I don't know that we've talked very much about where you come from, what your career has been, how you got started, and what drew you to public life, and how you're because we think of politics, it's become very black and white as to, oh well, if you believe this, then you have to be a Democrat, and if you believe this, you have to be a Republican. So, and I'm not even giving you the examples because I think people have their own ideas. But I want to know what informs you when it comes to being a legislator, and even beginning with what area you represent.
So my name is Rob Martwick. As you mentioned, I'm the state representative of the 19th district, the great 19th district. On the northwest side of the city of Chicago, and a little bit of the close northwest suburbs. So I have the neighborhoods of Jefferson Park, Portage Park, Dunning, Gladstone Park, and a little bit of Norridge, Harwood Heights, River Grove, and Elmwood Park.
Okay.
And so I grew up in a family where public service was very important. My father never held an elected governmental office, but he started out with a lot of service in his life, and he inspired myself and my sisters to do the same. So I was actually got very involved in politics at an early age, and it was just something that I felt was part of service to my community. I served as an assistant state's attorney for 5 years, which was probably one of the most fulfilling jobs I had. I worked in domestic violence. I worked in child support enforcement. And every day I felt like I had an opportunity to make someone's life a little bit better. And so that really kind of stuck with me. When I went into private practice, I sort of felt a hole and I wanted to get back into service. And that's how I got into doing what I'm doing. What motivates me as an elected official, as a state representative, and I hate to turn into campaign slogans, but really my first campaign slogan when I ran for state rep is something that I really live by, and it's straight talk, common sense solutions. I make a point of myself to get, when I'm on the floor and I talk, to talk about facts, truth, data, statistics, not in a dry sense, but as to call honesty to the problems that we face so that we understand them. We have enormous problems in Illinois, and the only way we're going to get out of them is if we accept the facts of what they are and the facts of what it's going to take us to get out of those problems. I do that with a sense of wanting to. I'm a liberal. We all know this here on your show. To me, educating children and protecting our social service net are two things that are very, very important to me.
Thank you. That's Representative Martwick, and we want to introduce everyone to Representative Batnick.
Well, I represent the Fighting 97th out in the southwest suburbs. So Oswego, a little bit of Montgomery, a little bit of Naperville, Plainfield, Shorewood area. I grew up in Lansing, Illinois, which is something we'll probably talk about more on the show because it's a border town. But from the day I graduated college, I've been self-employed. Five kids, self-employed, written my own paycheck. And I'm in commercial real estate, and I deal with other small businesses, and I see what the crushing regulations and the anti-job environment has done to businesses in this state. And that's what motivated me to run. I've never held office before, but I've seen on a firsthand basis what's happening to people and why businesses and jobs are leaving the state, because I've unfortunately helped people sell property because they were, you know, moving their businesses out of state. So I have five kids. Two are in college or about to go to college. My oldest left the state. My second child is going to college out of state, better opportunities out of state for higher education opportunities. And it's got to stop. My family's being broken up by the way the state is being run. And this is a great state. Let's be clear about something. Let's be real clear about something, everybody that's listening right now. Everything that a state needs to succeed, we have, except for the people down in Springfield getting together, not getting things done. From our farmland to the city of Chicago to the fact that we have access to fresh water like a lot of communities don't, to our transportation structure, we've got it all. We should be a killer state, and we're just underperforming dramatically.
Oh, Elliot, I know I'm not going to release you till later to go join the conversation, but I'm excited to continue this conversation with Representative Batnick and Representative Martwick, our Budget Crisis Corner. They are our guests tonight, and we will take any calls and questions throughout the segment. And I've got a few for you after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and it is our Budget Crisis Corner. Every Friday night, we invite two legislators to our studio. And actually, I mean, it's not just legislators. The door is completely open to Governor Rauner. I'm just saying, your invitation is emailed. We've called people. I don't know why he won't come.
We've definitely sent emails that are in his inbox.
I stopped and dropped off my business card. I was told to request an appointment with the governor. It's all right. But we are thrilled to have the legislators in our studio, because really when it comes down to it, this is where the battle seems to really be going. Well, I don't know. Would you call it a battle, Representative Batnick?
Well, I don't know if the battle's at our end.
I don't know.
I think it's more at the foretop's end. But
right. The three?
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly.
The triumvirate? Do we call him the triumvirate? Is that weird? That's weird to say. I don't know. Let me look that word up and make sure it's appropriate.
I'm not commenting because I don't know.
We're talking about the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, and the Governor of Illinois. There's been a lot of conversation about whether or not we're having work groups, right? So Speaker of the House Madigan said that you were going to be coming down to Springfield every Wednesday, and then shortly before the first Wednesday for the summer said that, no, we're going to do work groups. And are you familiar with how the work groups are doing?
So what I would tell you, Patty, is that, and I think we had this conversation once before, but during the weekend of Memorial Day, when the House took a one-day recess, I stayed there, and I kind of found my way into a working group, and I sat and I watched them work.
Were they hiding? Was there like a...
But they're meeting in a room, and the working groups have been, by and large, designed to be, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not. I might guess from my experience in local government that it's not a good thing, that maybe if it was public, the negotiations would be more in earnest. You know what I mean? If you knew everyone was watching.
Are they bipartisan work groups?
They are bipartisan. There were members of the both sides, House and Senate, Democrats, Republican, and a large contingent from the governor's staff. And they sat and they worked in earnest, and they discussed in detail these issues that we're trying to solve in order to get a budget accomplished. And so I think it's a good thing. You know, I think, you know, Mark had mentioned about a battle. Someone asked me.
I did. I asked about if it was a battle.
Yeah. And I know he commented on that. Someone asked me recently, they said, can you explain to me the budget impasse. And I said, well, we don't have a budget impasse. And they said, well, yes, we do. And I said, no, we don't.
We have a budget crisis.
We have a budget crisis.
You told me that.
Yes, because we can solve the math. We can sit down and look. It's math. It's simple math.
Okay,
it's not complicated.
Do you have ideas on the math, Representative Mark?
Oh,
Batman?
I got lots of ideas on the
math.
Is it cuts?
Because last night we got into this discussion. So it's a $7 billion out of whack budget is the way it's been described.
Sure. Okay, that, well, whoa.
Out of whack. $7 billion
No. What the Democrats passed through when they gave us an hour of notice was a $7.5 billion budget that was out of whack.
Okay.
But the budget doesn't need to be $7 billion or $7.5 billion out of whack.
So
absolutely
what can account for that $7.5 billion? We're spending too much. So what do we cut?
We are absolutely spending too much. And to clarify something, and I understand I'm coming from the super minority party as a freshman, so we might as well ask one of the guys on the street for his opinion on this. We can do that. But there's the working groups that are working on some issues, but there also is one group that's working on the stopgap budget to get us past the election. So the working groups are kind of working on more of a grand bargain, whereas the stopgap, there's a budget group basically working on the bridge.
Okay.
Well, and to be fair, that's only after May 31st, because before that, they're actually working on trying to come up with a budget.
Absolutely. So, yeah, correct.
So it doesn't have to be $7.5 billion out of whack. Have there been suggestions?
No, it shouldn't be. $40.5 billion, something like that. We're going to go from a $34, $35 billion spend to $40.5 billion. So our way to prosperity is to continue to just spend more.
So what do we cut? What is the acceptable amount to cut? What are the programs and services or whatever the expenditures are? What's the tolerable? What can we withstand to cut? I mean, I don't understand.
You want to pick somebody to go? Because I'm happy to go.
Absolutely. What do we cut? Yeah, tell me, because we asked this question last
night. Here's the problem. Go ahead.
No, I think it's important. And this is, again, something that I've mentioned, is that if we're going to make cuts, we have to be honest about exactly what we're going to cut into what level, right?
I mean,
and I think that's one of the problems that we have here. And I think that was, to me, and again, I've said this often, I think the speaker really dropped the ball on that budget. First of all, I agree with Mark. I don't think there was any reason we needed to give it to them with a few hours to spare. I understand the logic.
For the drama. How else are you going to have drama?
Well,
if
you had
don't
drama.
Just give them an hour.
And there
it's
was,
exciting.
There's another reason. And this is something that's been said. And for the record, before I say this, Mark, I want to say I disagree with this. But when I was there in 2012, we did a budget through the appropriations process, where we had Republicans and Democrats working on the budget, crafting a budget. We came up with appropriations bills and we put them on the floor. And after all the participation, the entire Republican caucus voted no. Now, that's what happened. So now when I said, well, why are we doing this? Why don't we give them time to look it over? And the response from my side was, well, they're all going to vote no anyway, no matter how much time you give them. At which point I said, so what? That's not the way you go about it. You should still
Is icky a political term? That's icky?
It was icky. And so, I just think that we need to be honest about the cuts we're going to make. The point of that bill did not become the budget. It was a bill that represented spending. And I think it was extremely important because it illustrated that if we don't sit down and talk about cuts in revenue, this is the challenge that we have. These were not all of our spending requests. By and large, these were many of the governor's spending requests. These are many of the programs that when people came before us and said, please don't cut our programs, none of the people on Mark's side of the aisle stood up and said, sorry, we can't afford it. Your program is to be cut. They said, no, we want to support it, but we don't have a budget. As soon as we have a budget, we'll support your program. So, so that's why I say I think it's good that Mark goes first, because I think, their side is the side that's more concerned with the cuts, and we need to hear them.
Go, you can respond to that.
Yes. I'll be real specific here. It's a false choice. So we talk about, oh, my God, the cuts to higher ed, the cuts to higher ed, the cuts to higher ed. Do you realize before this year, we were funding on a per-student basis nearly double the national average on higher education? Nearly double the national average is what we were funding per student. Then I can toss in.
For higher education. So someone going to University of Illinois compared to someone going to UCLA.
Correct. on top of that, our universities were charging 30% to 60% more than the conference peers. It's
so
about
where's that,
inefficiencies.
Where's that all going?
It's about inefficiencies.
So what's inefficient at our universities?
Procurement reform. And what I don't understand is when we have something, and Rob's nodding his head, this should not be a partisan issue, and I said it on the floor. Procurement reform is a fancy word. I had no idea what procurement reform meant 2 years ago.
Purchasing reform.
Yeah, the universities want it. It is so difficult to buy things for universities that sometimes when the University of Illinois gets a federal grant, mm-hmm. they can't take that money. They have to house it. Not only are our businesses leaving the state and our jobs leaving the state, they have to house federal grants at out-of-state universities because our procurement laws can't match up with the federal grant. Now, somebody needs to explain to me as a freshman how that's a partisan issue. And I said this on the floor. Why aren't we taking the easy things where we know where there's savings and efficiencies and correcting them? It's not a right-left thing. It's not an anti-union thing. It's just something that's a good government thing so that we can get more money out of the process and into the classroom. So okay. we've had bureaucratic growth off the charts at the university level, but it's not their fault. It's because of the rules we place on them. So it's hard for me to vote for more spending when we're unwilling to take and deal with these nonpartisan issues that just are more efficient. Coming from small business and somebody who's always looking for ways to do things more efficiently gets frustrated.
Craig, can you mark the time at which we had like significantly specific answers? I think for the first time in the entire time we've been doing the Budget Crisis Corner, we're off to a good start. 312-981-7200. What do you want to hear from our guests? We have Representative Batnick and Representative Martwick in our studio for the Budget Crisis Corner. More after this. Elliot has things he wants to say, but he can't yet. More after this in a moment. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It's Friday night, which means it's time for our new segment. We're in our fourth week of the Budget Crisis Corner. I'd like to not do this forever. I mean, I love having our guests in the studio tonight. We have Representative Mark Batnick and we have Representative Robert Martwick. I did not book you together because your names sound so cool together, Batnick and Martwick. It sounds like a duel that could happen at any moment. It's a little British sounding.
Like Alexander Hamilton?
A little bit, yes. Did you get tickets?
Anyway, do I get to be Aaron Burr?
Yeah, you choose. Or is it more medieval? I don't know. You sound like you could be like the Smith and the I don't know. This is the different jobs in a medieval town. Anyway, yeah. I'm meandering because I know who's on the line, and I know he wants to have the conversation. At the end of the show last night, I got one of our listeners who I love tangling with in a discussion about our budget, about our state of Illinois, which you know why we tangle, Punkin?
Yes.
Because we love our state so much, and we're passionate about it.
Absolutely. And hey, briefly, can I offer you a belated congratulations on your Oscar, Emmy, or Grammy, whatever you won?
Thank you very much. It's very sweet. Yes.
Gotcha.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Not too bad, kiddo. Hey, listen, Mr. Bartlett, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's refreshing to have a businessman coming
well,
in
thank you.
Fresh with a fresh attitude, asking fresh and very poignant, and I emphasize that, questions. How old is the antiquated law, you know, regarding the acceptance of funds, if you will, for the universities?
I can answer that if you want me to. This has to go back to the Blagojevich years, and it was an overreaction to the Blagojevich years in terms of trying to, quote-unquote, protect us. And what we've ended up doing is we're spending dollars saving nickels. So there's just from regulations, from how you have to tag things, there's the administrative costs have gone through the roof, and certain things are just so prohibitive you can't get it done. But it does deal with the Blagojevich scandal. So we know it's a problem. We know why we did it in the first place. We thought we were doing good. We realize that it's you know kind of an overregulation thing, and it's costing us money. We need to address it.
There you go. What do you think, Joe?
I just thought it might have gone back to we have a few decades-long career politicians that have been running the store down in Springfield for the longest time, and I was just curious as to how old it was. I thought it was more in-depth and later than older than Blagojevich. That surprises me.
Yeah, no, it's about a five-year issue. It's about a five-year issue. Yep.
Okay. I keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
Appreciate
Punkin. It. Talk to you later. That's Joe, one of our favorite right. listeners. And to that, you know, when it comes to what people are angry about, what comes up a lot is, you know, and we see this so much more now because of social media, the idea that this is the Democrats have done this and Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan, has the most power in the state. And the governor has said that if there are more Democrats that win seats, he will then become a dictator in the state of Illinois. There's all this language that is sort of pointing the fingers. Is that helpful as you try to resolve the budget crisis? Representative Martwick?
No, not in the least bit. And I think that, you know, I've said this often, is that one of the governor's major failings is that he has clearly in his years as a businessman, he never learned how to be a statesman. And, you know, right now, I think what he's doing is attempting to eke out a victory by dividing the state. And at this point that we're at, this crisis that we're at, it's very disheartening for me. I got to tell you, I mean, I can't even express how much it hurts me when I think about the trouble that the schools across the city of Chicago are in right now. Mm-hmm. And the idea that because I want our state to step up and save a troubled school system, that somehow or another that should be a political point, a point for division, really troubles me, because I have to tell you, Patty, if there was a school district in any other part of the state, in any district that was in trouble, I would think that as a state, that's our job, is to save these things. This is too important for politics. And I was really disappointed when the governor went on his little tour around the state telling everybody how he wasn't going to do a bailout for Chicago. And he just dug his heels in the other day. He's been touring all of the editorial boards saying, no money for Chicago,
That was the language in the last. Now, I don't know if you're familiar, Representative Batnick, but I had come down for 7 weeks. I was down a lot last year and stopped coming as much because what I saw last year, I didn't know what to tell people. It's hard to describe, and it's so frustrating.
Frustrating.
And so I came on the last. I came during the budget address, the governor's address, mm-hmm. and for specific dates and the deadline for the budget. But yeah, to what Representative Martwick is talking about, I hadn't seen that language yet. I mean, I'd heard a lot about the pensions, and you know, we've spent many years of borrowing against the pensions and not being able to pay our bills now. But that day about Chicago, this is a great bill if you live in Chicago. Chicago was in both the House of Representatives and in the Senate, and I was struck by that. I mean, and I know it's because I'm from Chicago and I love my city. You know, I will tell you right now, I love my city. More than I can't be anywhere else. I don't understand other places. I'll visit, and mm-hmm. I just can't wait to come back. My heart races when I'm flying into O'Hare. I know people hate that place, but I love it here. So that was really hard on my ears, and I think for people of Chicago. Go ahead.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, let's talk about the environment we're in, and people are upset about the governor's language and stuff like that. I got to say, as somebody that took $350,000 worth of TV ads negative against him, mm-hmm. and not a dollar spent for me on my side last election, and my opponent literally had one introduction mailer and about 30 mailers that all were about me. Her door-to-door mailer was about me in a negative way. This is the environment that Illinois is in. So they've got to get past it, mm-hmm. and the Democrats have to realize that there's somebody actually finally pushing back, and the Republicans have been pushed around.
So Chicago has to get past it.
Two things here. You're right. Talking about the political thing. Yes. On the school side, let's do it. Let's talk about school choice. You know, I supported the Reverend Meeks bill back before I was elected. Let's talk about changing the fundamental way we educate kids in the state, because in Plainfield, we spend about $10,000 per kid. In Chicago, we spend about $14,000 per kid, and they need a bailout after they asked for the deal where they divorce themselves from the state's pension system. After they don't pay the pensions into the pension system for 10 straight years, they get more money from the block grant. When you look at the low income criteria, whether it be school lunches, all that stuff, they get a disproportionate share of the low income funding from the state. So when you look at the block grant and you look at the amount of money that's spent, it's once again, we keep getting in this conversation about spending. And Representative Lang likes to say this thing like, "Where's your budget? That's where your values are at." Here's where my values are at as a small business owner.
Rob likes that moment.
I'm going to tell you, my values are at my results. So I want to see results from the Chicago Public School District.
What would be the results? What would be the good result? I want to know what the results have to be. Yeah. I'm just curious. What do you mean?
Well, I would prefer better than a 50% graduation rate. I would like to see something. You know, we're spending $14,000 per kid. I want to know the dollar amount that needs to be spent per kid, so that Chicago public schools have enough to educate their kids.
So
maybe it's a structural problem. Maybe it's not
well, you know, I mean, like, it's not just a structural problem. It's also an economic and a neighborhood problem. You know, if we're going to compare,
don't disagree.
So, I think you have more to say, because I'm guessing you have more of a closer relationship than I do to the teachers.
And the schools. And
Because I can't imagine comparing Englewood to any place else in this, not any place else in the world.
No,
could I compare what's going on?
No. Roseland? And to suggest, and with all due respect to Mark, who
that's my favorite thing anybody says.
No, seriously, because like I'm about
to kick in the teeth.
I really like Mark, and I love our conversation. So I don't, you know, but some of the things that he said fired me up a little bit, and I get where they're coming from, right. But the idea of saying to a school district that's broken, has 34 kids per classroom, that can't afford to fix roofs and can't afford to invest in arts and music. I have a school with 700 kids that after salaries, they have $50,000 left for curriculum. To suggest that they can't have any more money until they improve.
Right. How are the kids
it's
supposed
like, to... Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's not...
You have to invest in order to get the improvement. And the idea that because past administrations have failed us, well, then screw the state. Because we've had years of the state being mismanaged. Our job is to learn from the mistakes of the past and correct it going forward.
Oh, exactly.
We cannot say, well, they mismanaged it in the past, no more money for them. That's ridiculous. We need to invest in Chicago public schools and every other school. We need to increase our investment in education, and we need to fix our problems. They're financial problems. They'll only get fixed with money. And
structural changes.
Structural changes. Well, so efficiency.
Right. But see, and again, here we go, right? We can't, and this is the governor's mantra, is that no money without reform. But what Mark might think is reform is not necessarily what I think is reform. So you cannot say no money for you unless you give me what I want in terms of reforms, because I don't think your reforms are reforms.
So principals who are asking for more flexibility in the way they control their dollars is a Republican idea?
No, Mark. Okay. And I would agree with you on that. You know, when I say that, I'm talking about the major things. Like you're saying we should have an expansion of charter schools. Well, people in the city of Chicago, we have more charter schools than anywhere in the state. And we don't want any more charter schools. The people of the city of Chicago. So that's your reform? That's not our reform. We don't want that reform.
I think there's a difference between what Reverend Meeks had and what and more charter schools. And I'm fine leaving it up to the public on charter schools. I want to give you mentioned the Englewood neighborhood. Let's give that kid a choice to go to a private school and see what happens. Let's give him an opportunity scholarship. You know, Reverend Meeks's bill was for 20,000 kids. 20,000 kids that were going to have half the money of what we spend per kid in Chicago public schools to maybe go to a private school. If you're in one of the worst neighborhoods, I think that kid deserves a choice. I am defending that kid. I am standing up for that kid. I'm saying he deserves an opportunity to scholarship to go to the school of his choice because the public schools have failed him.
So, here's what I think about those neighborhoods is that we have for decades, we've institutionalized a system where those schools are not advancing at the level and the rate other schools in other neighborhoods have. Having gone to a school where they bus kids in, basically telling them, your neighborhood isn't worth investing in. Here's this nice school in Norwood Park. We're going to send you over there. And I think there's a cycle here that isn't necessarily just the education component. It is also the social and economic component.
Yes. And racial. Studies show that those kids, this is part of the reason that busing fell flat on its face, is that just sending those kids to a different school does not make them perform unless you have, they know that they have a safe environment at home, that they have adequate meals, that there is someone supervising them and helping them with their homework.
Yeah.
So if you don't have those wraparound services, you take those kids from those neighborhoods and put them into another school. It's, yes, there are those that will succeed, but those are the ones that would have succeeded anyway.
We have to take a break. Rob Martier, do you want to give a question after this break?
Sure.
All right. Excellent. More after this. And then Elliot, do you want now or after midnight? What do you want to do? You think about it in a moment. More after this on 720W. Everyone stretch. Just get up and shake it off. All right, Rob Martier, what do you got for our guests?
Yeah, quickly, I just want to play a clip from Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio. This is her talking yesterday.
Pass something that allows the state to continue to function. And secondly, pass the school bill. The school bill funds all the districts in the state, including Chicago, with more money than they had last year.
This is a question for both of the representatives. I as a suburban dweller, don't really feel like paying more money to support Chicago's schools. I just don't. But let's say, for instance, something passes where more money will go to Chicago Public Schools. What assurances do we have as taxpayers in the state of Illinois that the money is going to be spent wisely?
Well, Rob, what I would say is that we have the same assurances that we do that any government is going to spend money wisely. It's a democracy, right? It's not that government, Rob. It's not that government over there. It's our government. It's your government. What I would suggest to you, and I think Mark would join me on this since he voted for my bill, is that what are we going to do? We're going to take the back dealings of the CPS administration and put them out in the public through an elected representative school board. And so you would have those same, right? Like, what assurances do you have that any government is going to act wisely? You don't. What you have is you have recourse through the next elections. And if we pass an elected representative school board through the Senate and the governor signs it, at least then we will have transparency and accountability as we're supposed to have.
Two things real quick here. Number one, I got to thank my wife. This is pizza night back home for me and my wife. So she gave me up, and I love her, and Ellen's the best. If you're still awake,
I
love you, honey. Number two, you have no assurances, which is why I want structural change. And I did vote for Representative Martwick's bill.
Which would be structural change.
Right. Well, and I think we need bigger structural change. And I think we're at a situation where, well, I do think it's some of those really struggling schools, some of those kids trapped in them, we need to be thinking out of the box, maybe with the Reverend Meeks bill, which I supported, which I think was in 2009. Another thing that I heard, and this is an idea, I heard the idea of the Chicago Public School District is too big. I heard the idea of breaking it up into a bunch of sub-school districts so that parents could be more involved, because when you have such a big bureaucracy, it's really hard to talk to somebody if you have an issue. But when you get to more of a smaller school district size, you can actually deal with the superintendent, and you can talk to the people that are in charge. So it might just be that it's absolutely so big, and breaking it up into, and I'm not saying I'm for that, but I think we need some pretty significant structural changes there.
I've heard before the same kind of song and dance that the recourse that I have is the next election.
Mm-hmm.
So how then in the next election can we get rid of Mike Madigan? How does that work? I mean, because if we've had election after election after election, Mike's still doing his job, John's still doing his job, those guys haven't budged.
I will say that I think, and this is from my own opinion, I think there should be term limits on those offices. The Senate,
on the leadership.
The leadership, President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House.
I could go for that. I mean, because if his constituency wants him in there, that's fine.
And clearly they do.
But to hold the position that he has held for so long, then we get bogged down.
I have the solution. Can I give you the solution?
Here you go.
Okay. Sure. So we have a lot of people in the Democratic side of the aisle that are saying that they're for term limits for legislative leaders. So do it. Pick somebody else. 13 of you join with 47 of us. Guess what? We have a different speaker on the Democratic side.
Yeah. Hashtag pick someone else. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Representative Mark Batnick. And you represent which district? I want to make sure.
The Fighting 97th.
And that entails what
Oswego, Montgomery, South Naperville, Plainfield, Shorewood, a little bit of Joliet, one subdivision of Bolingbrook, if you want to get right down to it.
We should find out if Esmeralda lives in his district, or her family at least. She lives in Chicago now, but she grew up in Joliet.
Yeah.
I was often ridiculed for saying Joliet mispronouncing it.
Instead of Joliet?
Man, remember that live read? I think we had texters like right at my very first show. I said Joliet, and I knew it the minute I did it. That it was going to be a lot of fallout. Representative Robert Martwick, your district?
Chicago, the Northwest Side, Portage Park, Jefferson Park, Gladstone Park, Dunning, Norridge, Harwood Heights, Elmwood Park, and River Grove.
Are we going to have a movie theater at the Norridge? Is that going to happen?
There's going to be that's my understanding, is they're building a new Norridge theater, which I'm very excited about.
I'm very excited. Gosh, I still miss the Axel roller rink. We have a listener on the line who has a question or a comment for our Budget Crisis Corner with our guests. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good. Listening to the conversation, schools, I don't think that just being transparent and putting it out in the public and voting is a solution. I think more like Reverend Meeks thinks, that give the kids a choice. You know, if they're stuck in the zip code that's not producing, let them have a choice to get out of there.
You're a smart man.
The problem is not only in Chicago. The problem is also in the suburbs. I know Bolingbrook has a gang problem. I live in Berkeley. Now, their taxes are over $5,000 a month, at least, for seniors. The school system there, Proviso West, nobody will send their kid there because of gang problems and the school's performance. So it's not just Chicago. It's the administration. It's politics. It's the school unions. Because I'll tell you what, growing up in Chicago on the southwest side, I can tell you since a teenager until now, every year when the kids are ready to go back to school, what do you see on TV? You used to see a 2579, old channels. What do you see? You see the teachers out there with the pickets because they don't have a contract and they're worried about themselves more than the kids. That's been since I was 16 years old in the city of Chicago. So making it transparent is helpful. Making it to the clear to the voters for a choice is helpful, but it's not the solution. Give the kids a choice where they want to go if they're stuck in a bad zip code that's not producing.
Okay.
And obviously, it's not just a city thing. It's a state thing. If you got suburbs like Bolingbrook, like where I live in Berkeley, that have an issue with school administration, school politics, and non-producing. So to me...
Hey, Joe, I got a question for you.
Hold on a second, Joe.
I kind of agree. Okay. I kind of agree with Governor that Madigan is a big part of the problem. He's a career politician.
Okay.
He's a Democrat.
Joe, you're giving us a lot. Let Representative Marwick approach one of those.
I got a question, Joe. So if the cause of a kid failing is the school that he attends, right, and you think that we should give him a choice to go elsewhere, are you willing to go into that school and start picking out which kids you decide you just want to cast aside, that they're just destined for failure? Could you do that? Could you go in and say you can go somewhere else and succeed and you get to fail? Would you do that?
I would say if the kid was a type of kid that wasn't gangbanging or there because he had to be by the law,
okay,
and has no interest in learning, yeah, I would say
that's a distraction. That's a distraction. That's a neighborhood problem. That's a crime problem. It's a societal problem. It is a socioeconomic problem. But here's the thing, Joe. The whole idea of school choice is great in theory. The problem is that what you're doing is neighborhood schools are designed, our system of education is designed to make sure that every child, regardless of the background that they come from, has an access.
Not if they're a gangbanger or if they're not intellectually, you know.
Doesn't matter. They have an opportunity to access quality education.
That opportunity.
Yes. And when you take kids out and you say, well, we'll just pick off the best learning students and we'll send them elsewhere and we'll take the money with them, then you're taking a school system that's already handcuffed, that already doesn't have sufficient funds. You're going to take the kids that need more attention and you're going to take the resources and put it with the kids who are succeeding the most. It's a grand dream. But it could never be accomplished under the current system that we have without devastating the kids who need education, who need our assistance, who count on us to help them the most.
Representative Batnick, did you want to?
Yeah, I completely disagree because I think the point of the Reverend Meeks bill was that opportunity scholarship was going to be offered to everybody. It wasn't a pick off the winners.
But Mark,
and the
losers. They can't all go somewhere else.
Yeah, actually, they can.
No, they all can't actually. One of the problems I have with charter schools is I know that there's a mandate to make sure that there are special education students that are incorporated. But I also know many families who were pretty much forced out because they weren't helping the school maintain the sort of level that they wanted. So that's something that's very. There's no getting around that. So if you do pick and choose because they're gangbangers or they have cerebral palsy or they have an intellectual disability.
Charter schools are not opportunity scholarships. Let's be clear on that.
There's a big difference
between that.
Well, and the thing
If you take kids out of the school system at half price, then there's more money left for the kids that are there.
Take them out at half price and put them into charter schools. And then
private schools, whatever. If you give 20,000 kids, which is what the Reverend Meeks bill did, it wasn't a charter school. Mm-hmm. That system was, here's a $7,500 check. You can go to a private school. You can go.
That's not going
to
cover like a private school.
Actually, private schools are under $8,000 right now in Chicago. Somebody wants to Google that, feel free.
My alma mater right now, 10,000. Loyola Academy, which I would
suggest. We're nearly 14,000 per kid in Chicago public school. So,
I was going to say Loyola Academy, which is my alma mater, I believe is, I mean, it could be wrong, but I think it's 17,500.
But the teachers that work at places like, let's say, St. Tar's. I mean, I went to a parochial school, and I remember how much my teacher was making comparison to the teachers that were at CPS, and it was a pittance.
Yeah.
I don't know how they make it. I don't know how the Catholic schools are run, but I don't know how you say we'll spend $10,000 because we're spending $14,000. Let's give them $7,500 or $8,500, and that then
I'm trying to look it up right now on my phone. It's under, right. I believe it's under 8 G's, the average price.
So many numbers. These are the most numbers we've worked with yet, Elliot. Craig, you're taking the phone call, but we want to take some of our texts as well. But yeah, I mean,
it's my good buddy.
And I was talking a little bit off the air. Is that your good buddy? Did you know that guy,
Mr. Eamon Cummins? A good, very good friend of mine just walked by the window.
He did not.
Sorry, I got to point him out.
Yeah, no, please. I'm glad that you did. But I went to Onahan, which is in Norwood Park, and I mentioned earlier that they had bused kids from other neighborhoods who were schools were struggling, and it was a rocky situation. It caused a lot of tension in our school. Craig, you wanted to share
read some of the text messages?
Yes.
Sure. From the 630, you're not talking about issues that are statewide. My property taxes are $11,000, and I pay income tax, fuel tax, utility tax, and obnoxious 11% restaurant tax. I really don't care about all the Chicago public school issues. I want to know about the statewide issues.
Well, actually, the Chicago public school issue does affect the rest of the state. And also, I believe that Representative Batnick was talking about ideas that would help affect our budget overall, even if it's just the procurement structure.
Sure.
For universities. But if you want to address this particular...
Yeah, Cook County has, this, I think, might even be the only county in the nation that does this, has a two-tier system where commercial pays higher property taxes than residential. And it's actually part of it is what's caused some of the struggles for some of the border towns in the south suburbs, frankly, like where I grew up. Out in the suburbs, it's commercial and residential property taxes are taxed the same way. And according to the numbers with the block grant, Chicago gets a disproportionate amount of funding for their schools. So since we've been on a percentage of funding with 89% of the funding formula, I think we went up to 92% or something like that. The governor wants to push it to 100%. Because there's not enough funding from the state for schools, your property taxes are higher. And it causes what – I have an op-ed that's coming out on this. It causes – I'm not sure where in the suburbs you are, but it causes – what I call our NEFL areas, and that's negative economic feedback loops. And what happens is, like the town I grew up in, 13% commercial property tax rate. You have a $200,000 commercial property, you're going to pay $26,000 in Lansing, Illinois. Who's going to invest in that town? So what happens is once your property taxes reach a certain rate, and there's actually some areas in my district where I'm starting to get concerned about this, businesses can't invest in there because they're just going to have an enormous property tax bill. So you get into this loop. So businesses leave, or they don't expand, or the value property values go down, because when taxes are high, property values go down. That causes more need to tax the residents that are left from the levy, even if the levy stays flat. And you get into this loop where businesses leave, which causes more burden for the residents that are left, which causes more businesses to leave. And you have these areas of the state that cannot recover economically, even though where I grew up in Lansing, Illinois, great access to transportation, one of the biggest problems in the state, great access to transportation, able-bodied workforce. It's in a good spot right by Chicago. It has everything you would need to invest in a warehouse or a factory or shipping or some businesses like that. But there's no way that a business is going to invest and build a facility there because the property taxes are too high. It's actually cheaper. It's the most regressive system we have going, the way we fund our schools. So in Lansing, it's 13% effective property tax rate. Where I live, a middle-class income is a little bit over 3%. Yet downtown Naperville, the affluent area, you build something there, you're at 1.9%. So businesses have an advantage of going to the affluent areas, and you create these have and have nots because of the way we fund schools. And it causes high unemployment. It causes high social costs. You want to affect our budget? You deal with that. You deal with that. It's the NEFLs, negative economic feedback loops. And it's this loop that
just... So where's the bill?
There have been plenty. I'm sorry, but it's actually in the turnaround agenda, freezing property taxes. But that's not enough. We need to lower property taxes.
See, and now you understand why Mark and I are friends, even though we disagree on a lot of items. We both love to dig down on this stuff, and I love the fact that he's thought into this. Yeah, and he speaks a lot of truth to the problem that we have real issues with our property tax system. But the biggest problem with our property taxes across the state is the fact that We are dead last in terms in the country in terms
of
funding
education. I thought 49th, but I'll even say 50th might be. I thought we were 49th.
I thought we.
Either way, we'll argue. Right?
Yeah, it's low enough that we should be ashamed of it. And
from the state level,
and I've often said that the biggest problem that we may have as a state is that because of the financial condition that we're in, we have made so many cuts to services that we provide to the local level, not the least of which is education funding. And that has caused local communities to have to pick up the tab. And the way they pick up the tab is through property taxes, which is great if you live in an area where you have property wealth. But if you don't, then your property taxes skyrocket. And that's the negative loop that Mark talks about.
Right.
So he's absolutely right. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that my solution as a liberal would be to collect enough revenue at the state that we can actually invest in our education far in excess of what we do and provide real property tax relief, not a false freeze that might even bankrupt some local communities, but real property tax relief, dollar for dollar swap. We pitch in, they give relief to their residents.
Yeah, but let's think about this. So the Democrats had control for 10 to 12 years. They were funding at a prorated amount. The governor is the one that's pushing for 100% funding, so more funding from the state, and he's the one pushing for a property tax freeze. So while the Democrats had the Supreme Court, the House, the Senate, and the governorship, they didn't address the issue. Now this governor is just trying to address the issue, and he's being vilified for it. Think how backwards that is.
Well, I don't think the governor is being vilified for his attempts to fund education, Mark. I'm with him on that. In fact, I've actually agreed with him on this show. I've given him credit for wanting to actually fund education. My problem is that he won't actually get to the business of doing it until we give into an agenda that we don't agree with.
Like the agenda that has a $1 million workman's compensation bill for my school district.
I was just telling Craig, I don't have to be here at all. You guys just go ahead and...
See, this is what I was telling you during
this
break.
This is what we do.
This is what happens. We're supposed to be, you know, relaxing, and everybody's down in Springfield, and we end up taking it outside till 12, 1 in the morning talking about policy like this.
How are you doing, Elliot?
Elliot's dying to chime in here. Come on, Elliot. We're waiting.
I'm waiting for this.
Do you need the break to collect your thoughts?
Oh, definitely.
More after this with Elliot's Thoughts on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue on perhaps the most perfect summer night so far. And I think so. And I want to thank my guests for taking time out of their time with their families, their schedules, and joining us for our Budget Crisis Corner. We have Representative Mark Batnick and we have Representative Robert Martwick. Go ahead and say that a few times. Elliot Serrano. How you doing, Elliot? You've been listening for a while. I postponed the...
I'm afraid.
Yeah, no.
There hasn't been...
He only yelled the first time.
Yeah, there aren't enough margaritas right now.
By the way, thank you. Thank you so much to Broken English for the best margaritas we've ever had in studio. Thank you, Trevor, and for great tacos. Go ahead. You have a lot of thoughts on not just... I mean, you know, I describe you as being somewhat liberal. Somewhat?
Somewhat.
And our newsman, Rob Martier, would consider himself to be somewhat conservative. And I have enjoyed having you guys in the conversation and asking questions that I might not, because I'm trying to keep this balanced and keep it open for discussion. What would you like to ask either one of our guests?
Well, you know, I will say this, and as I've been sitting here for the past 4 weeks, and I've listened to the sides being debated, and for both the gentlemen here, I certainly enjoy the conversation they have off the air as much as they do on the air.
Nothing's happening when they're off the air. They sit here very quietly.
Yeah, they're very quiet.
Yes.
You know, and it gives me a little insight into how the whole process works. So I say this with a lot of respect because obviously you guys are, you know, very passionate and you have your opinions and stuff. I might not always agree, but let me make it on this point, you know, because you've already covered a lot of ground here, unfortunately, kind of repeating a lot of the same stuff that the previous representatives have said.
Sure.
Which is kind of like a frustrating thing for someone like me who just sits here and watches and all that. But you guys have kids, right?
I have five.
You have five. And you...
One on the way.
August 31st. And yay. So you're giving me an opportunity to give a shout out to my wife, Sharon.
There you go.
Who, August 31st, I am going to be a 50-year-old first-time father.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Okay. Thank you.
Congratulations. So let me offer this kind of like an anecdote or like kind of like a parable here. If you were a parent and you had two kids who were constantly fighting over something, And they're always fighting and going at each other. Well, they did this and they did that. And don't get me wrong, they probably have valid points to what the sibling is doing. After a while, though, you like get kind of tired of listening to the whole, well, they did this and they did that and they did this and they did that. And you're like, you know, just freaking figure it out, you know? And I've sat here for weeks now, and I've heard the governor this, the state that, and it goes back and forth. You know, I swear to God, you guys have killed the word bipartisan. You've killed it. I mean, next person.
We're having bipartisan margaritas right now.
Yeah, really.
Yes, we really are, yes.
And by the way, both of these gentlemen have shared margaritas with me. So again, I'm saying this with all due respect. But I mean, that word has lost all meaning now. It really feels like for us on the outside who are listening to this, it's like you're throwing buzzwords at us and terms, and you're explaining to us all these things, why this can't happen and that can't happen. In the meantime, I mean, it's almost not an exaggeration. People are dying.
Yes.
Oh, it's not an exaggeration. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And so it's like, when do you say, stop fighting? Let's figure this out. Because after a while, I mean, I am astounded that there's an election coming up and everyone's thinking like, well, my job's secure. I'm not worried about it. People aren't going to be PO'd that we're not doing anything, you know? So
here's what I would say. First of all, bipartisanship is not dead. By virtue of the fact that in this studio sit two people that, while we continue to have philosophical disagreements, which is not a bad thing. Thank God for the country of the United States of America where we get to have different opinions, right? I like to celebrate that. I don't ever demonize someone for believing something that I don't believe. I think it's great that we have different opinions. That's what democracy is all about. But that being the case, while Mark and I have very many different opinions, we work to find common ground. He supported my bill for an elected representative school board. He and I work together on a bill that he is the sponsor of, I am a chief co-sponsor on, that would actually provide some relief to our pension system. So we find ways to work together. When it comes to the budget, we're in a unique situation, and I said this off air. You mentioned off air. I'm going to say it on here. I don't think we have a budget crisis. I think we could sit down and do the math and figure out the budget. We could figure out the math of the budget. The problem is that for a long-term stable budget that provides for everyone, in addition to the math, the governor, and I'm sorry I have to say that, but the governor has said, no, we're not going to do that until you give me my demands. And these are things that he calls reforms. I would be willing to bet that my friend Mark would say, yes, these are reforms. I disagree. I don't think they're reforms. They go against the very people I represent. And I think it's absolutely wrong for him to suggest that one can't be done without the other. Our first responsibility is do the math of the budget, solve it. The next responsibility is debate and vote on his suggestions for reform. And if they fail, democracy has a matter of recourse for that. It's called elections. So take it to the elections, win your seats, and then you get your reforms. But to hold up all of this and cause the harm that you're talking about because he has to have his agenda, which he doesn't have the votes for, that's where I think is wrong. And I think that's what the impasse is all about.
Don't the Dems, though, have a supermajority?
No. Yes.
Technically,
no.
Yes. Well, in actuality, no. In the bottom line,
we're going to call
yes,
all three of them.
I've mentioned this many times. Absolutely. I've mentioned this many times. Yes, I can suck up all the air. I know, Mark. I've said this many times. We have 71 votes, which is the technical minimum number of votes required. But that presumes that all Democrats will vote in lockstep and key. We don't. And so there are certain measures where there are a few conservative Democrats will not vote to override the governor. And that's what's
holding up. You do realize that frustrates Democrats.
I have to stop everybody. Yep. I have to stop everybody because I got to take a break.
Ooh.
And Representative Batnick has to have
I'll shut up after the break.
No, it's all good. I don't know what our listeners think, but Elliot and I are like, tell us more about your craziness.
Happy. Can I give you my phone?
Yeah, we're happy. It's all good. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It feels like less of a crisis with margaritas from Broken English. How's your taco, Craig?
Oh my God, the carne asada tacos are great. And by the way, gluten-free, that's a corn tortilla.
Yes, I had the swordfish taco. It was amazing. We are enjoying our budget crisis corner. We're not enjoying the budget crisis itself. Elliot Serrano had some questions for our guests, Representative Batnick and Representative Martwick. He was asking, when do you just stop with all the yelling and whose fault it is and the finger-pointing, acting like two kids at home, and how do you come to a resolution? Representative
sure.
Martwick had the floor last. I want to give it over to Representative Batnick.
Well, you guys talked about the supermajority, which they do have a razor-thin supermajority if they can get everybody together. I agree with that. But I want to tell you about the first op-ed I wrote before I was inaugurated and after I won my election. If you look at times in the state's history, and if you look at times at U.S. history, when has the country done the best? When we've had divided government, right?
Or war. Right after the wars. We did really well after
wars. I'm going to go with divided government over war. That's just me.
I'm just saying after World War II, we did really well in this country.
The Clinton years, first 2 years, not so hot. The last six, you had the Republicans in Congress. You had Clinton in the presidency. The Reagan years, entirely Democrats in the House and Senate. You had Reagan in the White House. Go ahead.
No.
You
got
a look on your face I'm crazy.
No, you finish your thought and we can go to that.
My point is that I think that you've had government that works when it's been divided. Let's look at the state level. How did things work? We've had 10, 12 years we're coming off of. We talk about a lot of the stuff that's going on. Democrats controlled everything before Rauner came in. Supreme Court, the House, the Senate, the governorship didn't work out that great. We had a functioning government when we had a governor, a Republican governor, and Democrats that were in the House. So I wrote about how I expected that to work because it's worked in the past. So he talks about, well, we don't have 71. Well, guess what? Here's the deal. Since 2014, they haven't passed a budget that only requires 60 votes. I get a little tired about hearing about the 71-vote supermajority. The way it's supposed to work is if somebody has the House and Senate, they put something reasonable on the desk of the governor and dare the governor to sign it or veto it. If he vetoes it, it's on him. Now, sending him a budget that's $7.5 billion out of whack, it's not a budget, it's a spending plan, that's not reasonable. Had the Democrats said, okay, we're a Democrat state, we believe in unions, we believe in this, this is the best we can do, we're going to do this with taxes, we're going to do this with revenue, we're going to put it on the governor's desk, if he vetoes it, it's on him. They didn't do that. They didn't do that with 60 votes. They don't need 71. They got plenty to spare on that. They have 11 votes that they can spare on a full budget that matches that. And when they talk about the millionaire's tax and the progressive tax and all these things that were for constitutional amendments, those were constitutional amendments. Those couldn't go into effect in fiscal year 16 or 17 because we had to go to an election for that. The Democrats haven't passed with 60 votes anywhere close to a reasonable balanced budget in fiscal year 2014, 2015, and 2016. So my attitude is everybody just needs to do their jobs. And when my kids are fighting, I send them to the room, do your job. You do what you're supposed to do. You do what you're supposed to do. I think the General Assembly should, to a certain extent, ignore the governor, do their job, and then put it on the governor to either sign or veto whatever they come up with.
I've heard a lot, you know, well, where's the bill? Where's the bill for that? Where's the budget? Where's, you know, get it done? And then everyone just kind of goes, well, somebody else will do it.
Well, and so I'm going to, not surprisingly, I'm going to agree with Mark. I think we should. And I have lobbied very hard. I will tell you that I think that solving financial problems, it should not be a partisan issue. It should not be, well, there isn't enough revenue to do all the spending that we all want to do, mm-hmm. right? I mean, even if we made every cut that everyone wants to make, we still don't have enough revenue to get the... If we did every cut possible, we don't have enough revenue to balance the budget. So we need to raise taxes. So the idea that, well, you're Democrats, you guys go raise taxes, is, I think it's disingenuous. I think the last part of what he said, which
you have the majority, do your job.
I understand that, but it's not just my job. It's our job. It's our state. It's our finances. We all need to solve it. I think we should all sit down and do the math and come up with the answers. But what I would say is that when he talks about a divided government being best, I tend to agree. I think that that would be the case, but it's proven out not to be the case in this last time. When Governor Quinn took over in 2010, even though I had plenty of issues with Governor Quinn, we had a $10 billion backlog of bills. We hadn't made it an actuarially required pension payment in 40 years. We were facing a financial cliff, and he passed Medicaid reform, he passed pension reform, he paid down a backlog of bills, he passed a very unpopular tax increase, he made pension payments as required actuarially. We paid that backlog of bills down from $10 billion to $2.5 billion, saving the state millions of dollars of interest a year. We got stuff done. The governor came in and the wheels came off.
How you doing, Elliot? How are we doing so far on the responses to your question?
You guys realize you're going back to the thing that pisses everybody off.
Sorry. I know.
Well, I'll try to do one. It would be great if us as rank and file, and I've certainly tried to do it, try to pass something reasonable. I've certainly had off the, you know, you don't want to get away in the way of something that's working. But at some point, if they're not doing it, we should. And there have been some attempts that haven't obviously made it all the way to the end zone, let's say. But I think at some point the rank and file need to stand up and say, and if we don't get a stopgap budget, I think you will see a group of bipartisan legislators stand up and say, here's a plan. There's actually been some of that stuff that's been worked on behind the scenes that was actually, I've seen some of it, was fairly reasonable and fairly good. So to be more specific to your answer, and I hope I'm answering your question now, I think that there needs to be a bipartisan group of rank and file members that just say, we think this is reasonable. We should be have the ability to vote on this. Does that make you feel better?
And I agree with Mark. The thing is that what started, and that process was then sort of adopted by the governor, the speaker, the president. So it started out as legislators working together in their own sort of working groups.
Yeah, they went from rogue to kind of being part of the club, I guess.
That's
or whatever,
right.
To being rogue to sanctioned, and maybe being sanctioned wasn't necessarily the best thing for them. Maybe being rogue allowed them to get a little bit more work done. Yeah. So there has been we talk about the stuff about, well, should it be in committee or should it be working groups. I don't know if I'm comfortable with full blown working groups doing too much on their own. But the fact is, when Rob and I are talking in the street, we can get a lot of things done.
Yeah. Well, so two of you, and how many are in the House?
118.
And how many are in the Senate?
59.
Yeah, it's going to be a long, it's gonna be a yeah, long
but,
summer.
But my point is we can quickly bring in more Republicans and Democrats on some of these issues. I mean, I've certainly sat down with, believe it or not, Rob's not the only Democrat I talked to. I actually talked to a few other ones, but I do like him especially.
I know he requested you. I told you that. I like when our legislators make requests.
The
yes, Elliot.
Feelings mutual.
Another thing, when I hear the term work group, I think workshop. When I think workshop, I think improv. So I picture a bunch of legislators sitting around going, "Give me a scene. Give me a place. Give me
maybe that would help
an object, yeah, an object that I can use to balance the budget." You know, it's like after
it's,
a while,
it's actually not really far from that, I can tell you, having witnessed this stuff.
There's some theater down there, let me tell you.
I promise we are taking our text. We have so many texters that want to join the conversation. More after this on 720 WGN. We really have got to get a microphone for off-the-air conversations. Elliot Serrano is, continuing with his frustration. I think that he definitely represents so many people in the state of Illinois, including our texters who want to join the conversation, for Representative Batnick and Representative Martwick. What do you have, Craig?
Does he want new ones or the old ones?
Let's go to the old ones, because maybe they've been listening and they're holding
on. I got to keep scrolling. Give me a minute. Hold on, guys.
Yeah, hold on.
I will interject.
Time for us to shut up a little, Mark.
While Craig's looking
for
that.
No, you're great.
I will interject while Craig's looking for that. I mean, I have to be respectful of these two reps, because the talk we've been having off the air, I mean, both opposite sides, and they both make excellent points on things that are going on here. And yes, I might be a little frustrated, but, you know, they're talking me off the ledge.
Well, and that's why I want our listeners to know that the men and women who are working in Springfield are really at the very core. We talked about this many times, and we'll have this conversation again, that these are people who really do have your interest. They're trying very hard to do the right thing and coming at it from different perspectives. And I want you to hear what that is, that is holding, you know, that's both holding things up and yet really the same goal.
A general question first from the 312. Just curious, does this set a record for the longest period of time with no budget in Illinois? Have other states ever gone this long without a budget? Just looking for some historical context. Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. I believe this is the longest ever, and I'm pretty sure longest ever in the history of the country, and it's definitely the longest in the state of Illinois.
Oh.
Yeah, I know it's the longest in the state of Illinois. As far as the rest of the country, I don't keep tabs on the other 49 states.
We got our own problems.
From the 219, a breakfast and lunch for poor kids in schools is just fine with me, but it really frosts my ass, and that is in caps.
God, that's in my mind now. I can't shake it.
When they get dropped off in a BMW or a Mercedes and they have an iPhone.
You know what's interesting about that? I remember one time I was on, when Steve lost his job, I was on All Kids for the Boys, and I have two little, you know, at the time, I think Declan was maybe 3 or 4 years old, and he had, we went to go get him fitted for orthotics. He has a hypotonia in that's secondary to his neurological disorders. And I pulled up in my Honda Odyssey, which we had bought when Steve still had a job. And the doctor made a comment about the fact that I had a 2 or 3 year old Honda Odyssey and I was on All Kids. And I was like, I don't see how those two things, I don't know what you just did.
I don't know what you just
but
said.
But I'm going to talk about it someday and tell everybody that you're a jerk.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can you tell my wife how awesome the Honda Odyssey is? Because we have one and she wants to get rid of it.
I love my Honda Odyssey.
Oh, see, there you go.
I also love my Toyota Prius that I bought a 2010 just a couple weeks ago. So that orthopedic.
You sound pretty fiscally conservative. You got a minivan and a 2010 Prius you just bought, mm-hmm. 6 years old.
Yeah.
That is fiscally responsible. I like that.
Yeah, I don't understand how that's separate from, I mean, again, I'm the head of household. I'm the breadwinner in my house, and I think that there are plenty of people on both sides of the aisle who look at the bills and figure out what's best for their families.
You can also get a used iPhone online pretty cheap because you can't afford it.
Okay, enough with that. I'm getting the edge setting.
From the 773, why is Illinois only one of a dozen states which does not allow teachers to get their pension and Social Security? Wouldn't changing this motivate teachers to work in the private sector for a portion of their careers, limiting the size of pensions in general?
Meaning that if you serve as a teacher and you're collecting a pension, you cannot also receive Social Security?
Well, you can receive Social Security. Let's be clear. You just don't pay into Social Security. I mean, if you did that double, that would be a huge retirement spend for everybody. We were talking offline about Tier 2. The Tier 2 will be a bomb because it's the requirement by the feds, if you don't do Social Security, is the pension system has to be at least as good as Social Security. Tier 2 actually, in many cases, is not. So we will have to deal with that. But the one thing that I actually would like kind of along the lines of what they're saying is I actually have my teaching degree. You may not know that. My wife's actually a special ed teacher. You may not know that as well. I think if I decided to go back to school and teach at 50 – that would kind of be a good thing, that I could bring a lot of value to the classroom that 70-22 out of college can't. We have a system that's set up for getting somebody out of 22 and keeping them for 30 years.
I see.
So the pension retirement system isn't really good for somebody that's coming in. Let's say you have somebody that worked at Fermilab. Now they're 40, 45 years old. They want to do something different. Who knows? They have their nest egg, whatever. We have this in-the-box system. And I think
there's no incentive for them to become a teacher and share their knowledge.
It just doesn't work. Right. I think you need to be able to pay experience and maybe have more retirement options. And that's why I support an option of a 401k style system, so that if somebody comes in with some life experience at 40, 50 years old and they're going to teach for 5 years, otherwise you get the money you paid in and that's it. You don't get the match. You don't get interest. You don't get anything. It's not a great plan for people who are just going to teach for a little bit. And I think those sort of teachers would actually bring a lot to the classroom. That's the sort of thing. That's the sort of structural change I'd really like to see that I don't think is partisan.
Representative Martwick?
I tend to agree with him. I mean, you know, he makes good points. That's why I say we get along.
Yeah.
I'm a big defender of pensions, because the bottom line is that pensions, people always say, oh, 401ks will be cheaper. That's not true. 401ks are not cheaper. If you take a lump of money.
How did 401ks do last night, by the way? Just out of curiosity. Just curious. All right.
good point. If you take
Well, our pensions did real bad because they're invested in the market. So let's be clear on that, too.
But if you take a chunk of money and you want to invest it for both for the government and for its employees, pensions are the most cost effective if they're well managed. The problem, of course, is that we have not done a very good job of paying into them. If we don't pay into a 401ks, they're not going to be any better than a pension.
Right.
They're just going to be more costly. But that being said, I don't mind that there are options for retirement. I support that. If we can create a system that allows people to choose the option that they want, making sure that we don't bankrupt the system we currently have, I'm for that.
Yeah, so we have a lot of agreement on this because we're on a pension bill together.
That's
so.
Right.
If you really want to get bored, like 4 or 5 a.m., we can talk pensions. Like,
I know. We record that show, too.
Yeah,
that
sounds amazing.
I'm going to go ahead and recap what a caller just said to me. It's not a text, but he heard we were reading text, and he wanted to jump in, but he didn't want to be on the phone himself.
Okay.
This is what he said, and I'm going to do it like him. Hey, man, Sean here. Haven't these guys ever heard of Colorado, man? Just legalize it, dude. Come on. That was from Sean. He's curious what you think.
So I will, as I'm often one to say, I will say the thing that is not probably the best thing for me to say politically, but I think it's the truth. I agree. I think it's I think in a state that is so limited in our revenue options, I think we should explore all things. And clearly there have been most of the medical marijuana statutes, not in Illinois, but most of them in other states, are merely a ruse to provide recreational marijuana, while at the same time picking winners, saying you get to be a millionaire, but not you. It's protectionism. We should legalize it. We should tax it. We should regulate it. We should sell it at the 7-Eleven. We should sell it at liquor stores, and we should generate revenue for
Elliot, how do you like that one for an answer?
I getting some medical marijuana and a Slurpee.
Recreational.
Representative Batnick.
Man, it is 1 a.m. I'm going to go. Here's the one thing that's false about that. We get this idea that there's this new money. There's only new money when you create like new jobs and true new industries. If people are spending money on marijuana, they're not spending money on something else. So I don't necessarily. It's kind of goes along with the gambling. It goes along with the gambling thing in the boats. When people are spending money at the boats, they're not going to the movie theater. So I don't necessarily think that the.
Hold on a second. So if we're saying that there is no more money, so basically, whatever money is in circulation is all there is. Then how do we solve anything?
Well, to Mark's point, I don't look at
marijuana as productivity. You increase productivity.
No,
moving money around doesn't really increase. If people are spending money on this different entertainment, I'm going to use gambling as an example.
Okay,
I don't think it's a good idea. I think the social costs are too high. I think it's. I'm just not a fan of it.
But here's the thing: is that people are already smoking marijuana recreationally as it is, and the difference is that it is supporting an industry of illegal industry, and said we could regulate it, tax it, and provide revenue.
As long as we keep the prisons at 90%. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. The longest, we're going to do a record. I think we should just do a marathon of the Budget Crisis Corner. Maybe that's what we do, is just like have like a slot of time where we just keep bringing legislators into the studio, and however long they can stay, just keep talking it out. But so far, no. Elliot says no. Please, God, no.
No. It's, we get them in here, but they can't leave until they solve the problem.
I don't have enough room.
Oh no! It gets really uncomfortable. We'll just pack them in here, and people will walk by.
That's actually the Jack Franks plan. Remember?
Yeah. Yep. Lock them in the room.
Seems like
I'm
a
not opposed
hazard.
To it. To be honest,
I'm not opposed to it.
I think we would get stuff done.
When I was there for the budget address, everyone asked me to lock the doors, and I said there are people with weapons that would keep me from doing that. Pat wanted to join the conversation. Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
Oh, just fine. I had 3 points to make about legalizing marijuana. First of all, I don't smoke it, never have. If it's legalized, I still won't do it. So I'm not doing it for a personal point. But first of all, they said that, if you legalize marijuana, you'd be drawing from other industries. Right now, you have a substantial number of people, well-respected people, all different kinds of people that use marijuana. And what you would be doing is you'd be drawing away from the illegal drug trade. So that you're not going to get people, instead of going to the movies, I think I'm going to stay home and smoke a joint. No, now they will go to a legal establishment and pay taxes, and it will be regulated to make sure it's pure and not contaminated by the FDA. Secondly, if I wanted to buy a bottle of wine, I can go and buy it at Juul, and nobody at Juul then tries to sell me meth, cocaine, or other things. Whereas when you were buying marijuana, you were buying it from a drug dealer. And very often they have other things in the shopping cart they'd like you to try.
Talk about a weird impulse buy. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. I have a couple grams of Coke to go along
Thank
with
you. Exactly, Pat.
And the last point is these gangs prey on our kids. They get our kids to try weed. And say, here, I'll give it to you free. And then when they like it, so now it's expensive, but they get the kids to sell the weed for them, because if they get caught, they go to juvie, whereas when they're 18 or 21, they're going to be going to real big boy prison.
So I think those are 3 points right there. And then we could free up a fourth point. We can free up our law enforcement and our courts. Instead of going after people that have got a couple of joints or paraphernalia or stuff like that and sending them to the courts and wasting our police times and filling up a lot of places in our prisons that you don't realize how many spaces are taken up, not by drug dealers, but people had recreational use of marijuana, you know, and then you just make it legal. Tobacco's worse for you than marijuana is. And look how much money comes off of tobacco.
Yeah.
We could turn
Pat, I got to tell you, I would chime in here, but I'm going to turn this over to my friend Mark because I agree.
He already
with
raised
you.
His hand, by the
I
way.
I agree with you 100%.
I agree with you.
Well, you said that we should legalize it because people are doing it and we can earn taxes on it. Well, there's a bunch of people that are pushing heroin, causing a bunch of deaths. So following your logic, we should legalize heroin. I just don't
think they're not. Those are not equal choices.
They're not equal choices, no. but that is not the basis for I'm not getting the liberal legalization card over here.
The Kraken.
I do not believe the social costs are worth it. That's where I am.
Well, but
I think this is going to be one of those. We certainly have some bigger issues to deal with, but
agree to disagree is what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Are you going to say that?
Yeah, I think some people want to legalize it. Some people don't think the fortunately we have kind of something going on for Colorado. We can see how things work out for Colorado.
Whenever
in about 5 years,
whenever we have this discussion, Pat, and maybe you and I would agree or disagree on this. Whenever we talk about legalizing marijuana, you know, some people will say, you know, it's not as harmful as the effects of alcohol and things like that. But when someone says, you know, well, we may as well go ahead and legalize heroin, I always think of that same thing. Whenever we were trying to talk about, you know, equal marriage rights, you know, and the people say, well, now you can marry, you know, you can have sex with a snake and you can marry it. Like, that's always like, why is that the go-to when we're talking, because something is.
It is such a Republican ploy. It's like they always do that. I mean, if Republicans could, though, they'd marry their guns. So,
there it is.
It's 1-on-3 to this, this morning.
Hold on, Pat. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, they can't come back with a logical retort, so they come back with the ridiculous one. If you allow gay,
I use your logic. Your logic was that drug dealers push it. What drug dealers are pushing, especially in Will County, is heroin. And you said that we can control it and regulate it, and that makes it better. That wasn't my logic. That was your logic.
No. Now, her logic is for marijuana, not for anything that can be.
No, her logic was because people are doing this illegally, that's a reason to legalize it. That was part of her logic.
Now, yeah, but
she also said that if you're going to an illegal marijuana dealer, they will also have heroin. And then we made the joke about picking up crack on your way out of the Jewel.
Yes.
So I'm saying we're taking away that way for people to get exposed. So that way, if I'm going to the 7-Eleven to get my Slurpee and my peach-flavored Toke, you know, then, you know, I'm hoping that the guy there is not also going to push other things on.
Yeah, marijuana is not the gateway drug. I'm sorry, marijuana is not the gateway drug. If you want to ban the gateway drug, ban beer. Beer is the gateway drug, right?
It totally is. Where's my margarita?
So you're right. No, Pat, I agree with you. You know, we're... It's something that marijuana is just to be lumped in with heroin is just the idea. It just makes no sense. It's I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna stop.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna quit while I'm ahead.
No, but he was going with like he said. She had mentioned it as far as like if you're already doing something illegal, then let's lump in the other things that are also illegal and legalize them and regulate them. Pat, can you hold on the line? I want Craig to take your information and send you a gift card for Lou Malnati's. Do we have Lou Malnati's? Yeah,
You're hungry.
Because
oh. What was that, Pat? You just drove by one. Yes.
I live right by Lou Malnati.
Excellent. We'd love to send you a gift card for joining our conversation tonight. Craig will get your information online.
Thanks, Pat.
Go to loumalnati.com for the best pizza anywhere. Holy moly. How you doing, Elliot?
I'm good. But, okay, since we're going to throw that out there, okay, let's just for a crazy moment say, okay, we're going to legalize heroin and we're going to control it and we're going to tax it and so on. What is it that kills people on heroin? How did he get heroin overdoses? Is because the doses that they're getting, it's not the same concentration or whatever. Sometimes there's other stuff in it. There are these amateur drug dealers out there putting that together. If you have controls in place,
you can't get the same high. Guys are going to take multiple to try and get that same thing as the first high.
And then they do the same thing with prescription drugs now. And we're doing the same thing with any other type of drug. All I'm saying is, and I'm not saying, I mean, again, I'm not going to, I don't want to say I'm a proponent of heroin, you know, but the reality is the reason why so many deaths are caused by that is because of the lack of regulation, because you have so many illegal conduits for it, and people are getting a hold of it in uncontrolled forms.
Here's my question. How are we going to play what's in the box with two legislators in the studio? I think that we have to let them hang out in the green room, and you're going to read all the reviews because you're the only person.
You want to play what's in the box?
Have you heard us play what's in the box?
He's got the pipes for it.
Okay, here we go.
You guys are aware what the game is.
312-981.
I have no idea.
312-981.
You're both playing.
312-981-7200.
Kelly,
I know we're playing way late. 312-981-7200. We're playing. Oh my God! Look at how fast.
Oh God!
They've been waiting.
312-981-7200. We're playing What's in the Box? Budget Crisis Corner Edition. We're after this on 720.
It's on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one. And they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses went to the university where they
You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We are playing What's in the Box, and we're so excited to welcome one of our listeners to What's in the Box. Kelly, how long have you been hanging in there listening to Budget Conversation?
The entire time. I've just been sitting in the back. Like you said earlier, it's beautiful outside. My husband and the kids are asleep. I've just been kind of hanging out, doing homework, and listening to you guys. So,
what kind of homework are you doing?
I'm actually going to school for my BSN right now, so just writing a paper.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling back. I know Kelly played one of John Tatey's quizzes earlier in the week, so I want to thank you so much, Kelly. I'm glad that you called it and got in. And your opponent tonight, taking the challenge as well for What's in the Box, is Chris. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Patty. You look beautiful tonight.
Oh, I'm not. My mom would tell me I wasn't standing up straight. Thank you very much. It's the Jack Purcells that make me happy. It's my Converse. So you've heard us play What's in the Box, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. I'm a longtime listener.
Oh, wonderful. So for the listeners who have never heard us play, because I know we are heard in so many places, you know, both in the 38 states, Canada, both, I mean, like this continent and around the world. And I want to thank everyone for joining us. So our game is... I do a lot of shopping online, and I base a lot of my purchases on reviews. And it occurred to me as I was shopping, as I do for certain items, that the reviews for something like maybe a blender or a hand mixer or a toaster sounded very similar to those for, you know, because I travel and I'm on the road a lot and I'm alone. And sometimes the kids are out and my husband's not around, and I buy toys. So I'm just saying, I do a lot of shopping online, and I was fascinated by the reviews. And I love sometimes they're very specific, sometimes they're basic. And your task is to tell us if the review is for an appliance or a toy. All right, Kelly, you are up first. Elliot is going to read for you.
Oh, I got this.
Good luck, Kelly.
I like that. Look at that. Good sportsmanship already right off the bat.
It's all good.
Okay, reading for Kelly. Pondered and pondered. Do I need this? Is it too large? I absolutely love this. It is surprisingly lightweight, but it feels and functions as high quality. But I probably should have gone up to the next size.
I think you're overselling it, so I'm going to say appliance.
That is correct. Very good.
Whoa.
Good one.
Look at Kelly using strategery. I love it. Thank you, Kelly. Good job. So we got one on the board for Kelly. I have to find my bell, so hold on a second. I will do that after Chris's round. Well, next time. Representative Martwick, you are reading for Chris.
Works excellent. We damaged the paddle by accident. our fault. And they sent us a replacement, which was greatly appreciated.
What do you think, Chris?
Gut feeling it's an appliance.
You are correct.
That's for you. Both of you have both gotten you've both gotten your first ones correct. Kelly and Chris are on the board with one each. Now for Kelly, Representative Batnick will be reading.
This thing is amazing. It does everything you want it to.
Wow.
Oh, geez. That's it?
That's it.
I'm going to go toy.
Appliance.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I know. That was dramatic and everything. All right, Elliot, you are reading for Chris.
All right, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Best money spent. I love this thing. So many settings, so many speeds. Gets the job done every time and in different ways if I want to.
An appliance.
It's a toy. Oh, I'm sorry. It was a toy.
You're
both... See, I intentionally oversold that one because they're figuring me out. There,
I know. So, yeah. Well, that's why we have to do Yoda at one point for this. Reading for Kelly, you are both tied 1-1. Here is Representative Martwig.
If there was a fire in my house, after saving the dog, this might be the next thing I save.
Oh. Man, I love my washer, but I have to go toy.
Yes! I'm sorry, I don't know why I know this. I know. I remember pulling the review. Is it really an appliance?
It's an appliance.
Oh, that's my toy that I would say.
Sorry, Kelly.
I'm sorry, I don't own it up.
I don't own an appliance, but I can't see pulling the refrigerator out of the house.
Well, it could also have been my hand mixer. I'm so sorry, Kelly. It's okay. You're still tied. It's 1-1. Representative Batnick will read for Chris.
Nice and quiet. Powerful motor. It went so fast. I loved it. Better than doing it by hand.
Oh, that's the best one yet.
Come on. It's got to be a toy.
It is an appliance.
Whoa! Oh. Okay, we were all a little too excited. Elliot, will you please read their tied? It's 1-1. Please read for Kelly.
All right, Kelly.
I'm here.
All right. The unit generates so much heat while it's turning.
That's right. That's it. That's it.
That's it.
I keep getting like one sentences. We haven't got one. It's got to be a toy.
Oh. It's an appliance. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, no,
you're tied. Hey, this is you guys out of the gate. You're both doing really well. Don't sell yourself short. All right, we're gonna take a break here. Apparently, we're still playing What's in the Box Budget Crisis Edition. We're up to this. In the houses. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio in our very first round of What's in the Box? Budget Crisis Corner Edition. There's got to be a better name for it, Elliot. I'm not sure what it is, but we have Kelly and Chris on the line. My guests are reading reviews for them, and their task is to tell us whether the review from, you know, online purchases are for an appliance or a toy. And I apologize. I'm going to have to rely on the honesty of our contestants or perhaps someone in the studio who can remember who we read for last. Chris, Kelly, do you remember?
It was Kelly we read for last. Chris
Kelly
was
last. Yeah.
Okay. And who read for her now that you've got the answer? So Representative Martwig?
I'm up.
Yeah. You're up.
And so this is for Chris, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Costs an arm and a leg, but my wife loves it.
I think
it's an appliance.
Oh, Lord.
Mm-hmm. An arm and a leg.
Sorry, Chris, it's a toy.
You'd be surprised. Once you start getting over the $100 price range, you're like, really? How much better can it be? Oh, it can be. Go ahead, Representative Matt Batnick. It's your turn to read for Kelly.
Kelly, you on Facebook lately?
All the time, unfortunately.
Of the last 5 minutes?
No.
Okay, good.
Why?
Very handy, but basic and simple.
toy.
That is an appliance.
Oh.
I read this on live Facebook video.
Oh, you did? You did?
Oh. You were doing a Facebook Live. Oh,
so you were giving a cheat for anyone who might have been. Yeah, no kidding.
Right.
All right, Elliot. You will be reading for Chris. They're tied 1-1.
All right.
Come on, Elliot.
Okay, buddy.
Come on, Chris.
Yay. I have not come across anything else like this that gives the same experience. I mean, I highly recommend. It's nice to use alone. But it added quite a bit for me to have someone else handling it instead of my own hands.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
I pray to God it's a toy.
You would be correct.
Whoa.
Yes.
Hands. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Representative Martwick, please read for Kelly.
Low speed, a little fast. In general, it serves its purpose. Would recommend.
I have yet to get a toy, so I have got to say toy again.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
Oh, my.
That's an appliance.
Really?
Yeah, sorry.
It's got there you go. Representative Batnick, please read for Chris.
Oh, my God.
High quality. Excellent performance with many modes of operation. Battery life is good. Of course, that depends on how long you used it at one time.
Wow. Yeah, toy.
Ding, ding, ding.
Wow. That would be true. Go ahead, Elliot. Your turn to read for Kelly.
For Kelly.
Yes.
All right, Kelly. Love this. My only complaint is that there isn't any handle, and I tend to accidentally turn the speed dial while using it.
Come on, Kelly, you got this.
Oh my goodness.
You got this, Kelly.
I'm so tripped up right now.
Okay, go with your instinct.
Place, but I'm going to go toy.
That is correct, yes!
Excellent, Kelly. It's 3-2. Chris is ahead by 1. Representative Martwick, please read for Chris.
Can't live without it.
That's it.
Wow, never had a senator ever tell me that. But
Representative.
That's okay. Can't live without it.
Progressive tax.
We'll go with toy again.
I'm fooling everybody. No, I'm sorry, Chris. It's an appliance. Mm-hmm.
Very deceitful.
Very deceitful.
Mark would agree.
Is this a plan to derail my 2022 gubernatorial bid? Is that what this game is?
Wow, we already had a plan in place. Craig's right. Giving you a big yes, it is.
All right, who's up? Callie here, who's up?
Oh, yeah, it's me.
All right. Best thing ever. I have one and bought another one as a gift. Everyone loves this thing. Don't waste your time with all the fancy settings, which never work anyway.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's a tough one.
I kind of feel like, you know how last week somebody said they bought it for their mom and somebody said appliance was actually a toy. So I kind of want to say toy, but I'm going to say appliance.
You got it.
Hey!
It is an appliance.
Wow, she really worked through that one. There were diagrams.
Wow.
There were like the references to past shows. I like that.
Wow.
She was flipping through all the yeah, I like that. The Rolodex.
I'm pacing in my backyard right now.
Well, you are now tied, and I'm glad it's a lovely evening for the pacing while you listen to What's in the Box. Play What's in the Box. Elliot, please read for Chris.
All right, Chris, since we're visiting past shows, I'm going to do this one in the voice of Yoda.
Mm.
All right.
Oh, that's very helpful.
Okay. You have no idea.
I'm a very picky, choosy person. Some may say they love it or like it, but coming. Rather, I just not use this. A waste of money it is.
Craig's entirely confused. He would not buy that item.
Craig's not the only one.
Does it really say a waste of money it is?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It does. It does actually say that. I remember this review.
Toy.
That is correct.
Hey, it's 4-3. All right, come on, Kelly, stay in there. Representative Martwick will read for you, Kelly.
Just trust me. This is what you want.
Oh, and someone's going through my brain.
I
right
just
now.
Heard a campaign slogan, by the way. For sure.
I was thinking. Oh my goodness. Thank God nobody can see me blush over here.
You just made my night.
There you go.
Even though you said it like that, I'm still going to have to say appliance.
Oh, Kelly.
Do I get a prize for deceiving everyone? I really have. I don't think anyone's guessed one that I've
you
got.
You see what I'm dealing with? The deceit from the left side of the aisle.
Sorry, Kelly. That was for a toy.
Total politician.
Oh, man. This is the best thing ever.
My goodness.
Okay. I'm sorry. Representative Batnick, please read for Chris.
I cannot imagine how technology can advance past this. Some other really smart person is going to have to work really hard to top it.
Can you read it again for me, please?
Does this one get reshuffled?
I'm just listening to how you say it.
I cannot imagine how technology can advance past this. Some other really smart person is going to have to work really hard to top it.
What do you think, Chris? This is for the game.
Appliance.
Toy.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Kelly lives to play another round. I'm so excited for you.
I do.
Here you go. Elliot will be reading for Kelly. There you go.
Come on, Elliot.
All right. Okay. I received this for my birthday, and I'm very happy. I love the smoothness and how simple it is to operate.
What do you think, Kelly?
Oh, my goodness.
No pressure.
I know, no pressure. Maybe. Toy.
It's an appliance. I'm sorry.
Oh, my.
I know. You're okay. We're helping you get your steps in.
It's my sexy voice, isn't it? It makes everything sound like a toy.
All right, Representative.
I told you, I'm blushing over here.
It's all good. That's the point of this game. It's all for the happy blushing. Representative Martwick, please read for Chris.
Can I say this? I am so looking forward to this next review because, seriously, you got the pipes.
Was that the review?
No.
I've lost track.
Oh, if anything was going to derail my career, that was it.
Nice. Well done, Kelly.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all right.
This is for Chris, right?
Yes, it's for the win.
It's very noisy. I've only used it once, but I'm getting rid of it.
Why not go down swinging and say a toy?
That would be an appliance.
Oh.
I was swinging.
Wow.
Can I say?
That's the review.
He read it, and I was convinced it was a toy,
me
too.
Me too. No, that was well done. Okay, Representative Batnick, are you telling me that you have...
No.
Please read the review for Kelly.
For the tie.
I thought he ran out of reviews, but he has one.
100% satisfaction guaranteed.
Just because of the voice, I have to go toy.
You got it.
Hey, it's a tied game. It's 4-4. Fantastic. Okay, Elliot, here we go. It's tied 4-4. Do you not have any more reviews? Do you want to go with that one? Are we in that kind of game?
I don't think we're in that kind of game.
No, we're not in that kind of game. By the way, can you read this? I know it's missing a piece of paper.
Yeah, I can read this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Does it have what it is? Let me see this one. Nope. I'm sorry. You can't have that one.
I like that one. That one's a good one, though.
Here we go. Right. There it is. Okay, here we go. For Chris.
Okay, Chris, let's bring this home, okay?
Let's do it.
So far, it works great. I have to use it more before I can comment any further.
Toy.
Appliance. Oh. Sorry.
Oh, you need one?
Yeah, I need one.
Here we go. There we go. All right, Kelly, this one's for you.
Wait a minute.
There we go. possibly for the win. This Representative Martwick will read for you.
Not perfect, but very close. I've owned more over the years than I can count. I've tried low-end, high-end, and in-between. But this is the best.
Oh, against my better judgment, I'm going to say appliance.
Kelly, it was a toy!
No!
That was rough.
Man.
Do we just give up on the game at some point? Can they both lose?
No, they both win. Because we're all winners here right now.
Okay, Representative.
Can we play, can we play if Craig has a hat on or not?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
No, because he's watching. He told me I look lovely tonight.
No, I know. He did.
Yeah,
I know. I'm just
all right. I'm up, right? I got to come up with
no, what is Craig wearing that he doesn't usually wear? All right, go ahead, Representative Batnick.
Polished design, long battery life, water resistant again.
Again? I don't understand.
That was for Chris.
That's for Chris.
Water resistant. God, I gotta keep saying a toy. It's gotta win sometime.
It's appliance.
Wow.
God, Lord, help me.
All right. Elliot, I think that you're going to have to, yeah. I'm gonna turn their microphones off. You're going to play this one. Yeah, go ahead. All right.
Man.
I know.
This one?
That's okay. Do you want to?
Yeah, I'll do all it. Right, mm-hmm. All right, Kelly.
Kelly, listen very closely. I don't want you to,
I'm listening.
You to be focused. Chris, you be focused too. Just go ahead, Elliot. All right.
Great purchase. And as described in the listing, I prefer to use it for clitoral stimulation. It's the best thing ever. Love it.
Wow, this one's tough. Is it over?
That's what she said.
I don't know how you guess on this. Do you need like clues with the words? Do we want to break down all the words?
It started out so monotone. It was just like, oh,
it was.
God. Oh, what's a good oh. Okay, now, yeah. Kelly, I don't want you to panic on this one. Just take your time with your answer.
As much as it sounds like it might be a can opener, I'm going to get the toy.
How did she do that?
Congratulations, wow. Kelly. Chris, it's I have to, you know, obviously I handed Elliot my game ender. I have a couple of them in my rotation. So, Chris, thank you so much. Kelly, both of you have won. Kelly, you'll have your choice of a LouMelNize gift card. Go to LouMelNize.com for everybody else to get the best pizza in the Chicagoland area. And also, an Apt Electronics gift card is available for whatever Kelly decides she wants. AptElectronics.com. And wow, that was epic. Thank you so much both
hey,
for playing. Yes, Chris.
You know what my answer would have been?
What? Okay, he's on hold. All right, we have a couple of phone calls to make after this break. More on 720 WGN. So I would say that none of our legislators have gone the distance the way Representative Batnick and Representative Martwick have. This is the first time we've had our legislators on the air the entire time. Would you say that this was the... I've already gotten a text from Senator Tom Cullerton saying, "Margaritas? Dude got steak and ceviche. What's his deal?" Didn't he? I don't know.
Yeah, we went tacos and margaritas.
Yeah, I don't. Okay.
Okay. These two reps by far are the most fun we've had so far. And if you you want to run for governor next term, I'll vote for you.
Ooh,
awesome
for Batnick.
Yeah, I'll vote for Batnick.
I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm just saying.
He's, no, he's talking about 2020.
What if Representative Martwick runs? For
oh, do you want to run? Are you running?
He doesn't know.
Yeah, he doesn't
he
know.
He kind of looks like a federal guy. I see him moving up to the congressional level.
I know.
Yeah, there you go. So, but again, a lot of fun. Anyone who
got
read
a face for Congress.
I don't hear it. Is it on there? Oh, there it is. This is Representative Ken Duncan's phone ringing right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go around. We're going to say Craig, me, Elliot, and then I'll point to you guys and say hello. And we will say hello to him that way. Are you guys going to like throw him a big going away party? He's when is
it? You've reached 312.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. We don't obviously let the numbers on the air. He does live in Chicago, so 312 is kind of assumed. Okay. So,
when you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hello, Representative Ken Duncan. This is Patty Vasquez with WGN Radio.
Craig Collins,
Elliot Serrano,
Rob Martwick.
Mark Batnick.
That was
the best.
That was the best. This has been we have a budget crisis corner every Friday night. And we called you earlier in the week to say hello and see how you're doing on your voting. And the legislation's come in front of you, obviously including the budget. I don't know if our representatives in studio wanted to give you some thoughts as you wind up your career in the legislature, at least for now.
Best ties in the legislature.
They are lovely ties.
Well, you see, now he capped it off with best dressed in the legislature.
I think you stepped it up a little bit. He went best ties, best dressed. I think, and that's it for his record and on the floor.
Hey, he actually refers to my son as Mini Kenny D. My 6-year-old son came down and dressed in a suit with the matching handkerchief and the tie and everything, and I got a picture and everything. I appreciate that.
You know, I would say this whether we were talking on Ken's email or voicemail or not, but you know, of course, the end of his career it seems to be personified by this
end of his career in the legislature.
Yeah, it was, and you know, I give him credit for taking choice, but I hope that you know, he stood up for something, he did something. I disagreed with him. I think a lot of people did, but
and the president called him out during his speech.
Yeah, president called him out, which is pretty rough.
And he turned it into a positive commercial somehow.
Yes,
God
he
bless
did.
Him.
Yeah, I don't know that it actually worked, but I the important thing to know here is that that he had a long career of service. He really did some positive things. You know, at a time like this, he took a gamble and he took a stance that didn't work out for him. But I hope that people will remember the good contributions that he made.
And if only we'd had the budget crisis corner while he was before his primaries, perhaps he would have had a chance to share his thoughts. Did you want to say one anything?
Oh, I think he would have loved it. I think you should still have him in studio.
Absolutely, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun.
Well, we welcome you to join us anytime, Representative Duncan. We are doing this until the budget is resolved. Do you want us to share anything about the show we've had tonight? Elliot?
I'm wondering if Representative Duncan would have read reviews for What's in the Box.
I bet you.
He would have been great at it.
Matt Babal, we are leaving a message for Representative Ken Duncan. If you want to say hello, we'd love to have you join us.
Are we still on the...
yeah, we're still on his voicemail.
You're on his voice.
Yeah.
You do this every week?
every night I call a legislator. Yeah. Representative Batnick can expect a call from us. I believe we've called Representative Martwick twice
What happens
now.
When we get into year 3 of no budget? Will you still stick with this, Patty? Do you have the fortitude to stick this out?
I do. I can go the distance. I can.
See, he says year 3 joking, but I don't. I'm like,
really
I can
joking.
See that.
Oh, there are people who think it's not going to be during the term of Governor Rauner. I mean, at least
there will be no budget until, yeah, whatever.